From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Each week, our panel of shrinks takes a look at pop culture through the fascinating lens of psychology. And today we talk about pot culture, the psychology of marijuana. That's in our second segment. I'm Dave Verhagen here in Nash Vegas. I'm a psychologist, author, Comic-Con panelist, and all-around good egg. And in beautiful Charlotte, the Queen City of the South, sits our diminished panel. Frank Gaskell tells people he's a psychologist. He's an author, the founder of the recently completed and successful first annual AspieCon, and he's the inventor of the garden weasel. He's also the least emotionally stable person on the panel, perhaps the planet, and most of the time he's usually very happy or very upset about something. Frank, how about today?
Well, today I'm feeling a little apprehensive, which is an unusual emotion for me.
That's a good word.
Yes, thank you. On Monday, I will be starting the Whole30 diet plan, and I'm really, really not looking forward to it, but I've agreed to it, and there's only certain things I can eat, so there will be less of me around in a month.
So you're going to lose some weight, but it sounds like your blood sugars are going to be unstable, so we're going to have a really cranky or like hyper Frank. Is that right?
Well, no, if you do it right, you're okay.
Okay.
But my palate, as they say, will be miserable.
Mm-hmm. And you will be miserable.
Right.
And I will make everyone around me miserable.
This is why I moved 400 miles away, so I don't have to deal
sad,
with this.
It's true.
Well, Frank, good luck with all that.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, and we'll see how that works out for you. So by the next podcast, you'll be well underway, right? You'll be in the middle of all of it.
Well underway.
Okay, very good. Well, you also heard not quite Dr. Wright, Emma Kate Wright. She's here. She's a doctoral intern in psychology. She loves Harry Potter, Game of Thrones, catty reality shows, things like that. Emma Kate, give us an update on being not quite Dr. Wright. How are we doing in our progress toward being Dr. Wright?
We are doing really great in progress. I have been working on my dissertation, which is so much fun. For those of you who don't know what a dissertation is like, it's like a year plus long project, and then you spend forever writing and doing data analyses, and everyone's asleep now. So it's coming along. I'm hoping to defend by the end of May or early June.
Wow.
And can you give us a very succinct idea about what it's about without boring us?
Putting us to sleep with one of your horrible stories.
So basically just know that I am looking at a construct or a topic about math anxiety in kids that struggle with learning math. So
Is it time to wake up?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Wake up!
Fascinating. Well, normally Jonathan Hederle's here, but he has flown the coop. He's on vacation. So Frank has stepped in to scour potentially fake news websites and other real news websites for stories about psychology in the news. And today he's going to serve them up to us hot and fresh in our first segment that we call Being Human.
Well, this first study I find fascinating, and I know will result in a lot of arguing and debates because passion gets involved over science. But it's called Here's the Biggest Study Yet on the Differences Between Male and Female Brains. And basically, it's the biggest study ever. There are 5,000 people who've agreed to have their brains scanned. It's called the UK Biobank. And they're all in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And the data suggests that men and women's brains are different. And the prediction rate in terms of brain features predicted the subject's sex between 69 and 77% of the time. And so the question is, do you believe in the science that women and men's brains are different? Or is it we just want them to be the same for, I guess, cultural reasons?
Well, so first, just to clarify, so the study did say that there's a lot of overlap within the brains between males and females, which is duh, we're both humans. But they did talk about certain areas of the brain being different. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what is kind of interesting here. So, you know, this line of research has just always fascinated me because, you know, everyone wants to explain away sort of stereotypical differences between genders. And, you know, I come from the mindset that, you know, there probably are some differences in the brains between males and females. But what's the point of that? So is it, and the article talked about this too, you know, can we say for sure, oh, if there's a difference here, if that's going to have an impact on our ability to intervene and be preventative on some illness or disease, that's right. Awesome. But otherwise, like, it just feels like a lot of the sex research just is kind of political.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's become that there's, and I've written about this. I have a chapter in a book where I discuss this. And so it's no secret that I come down on the side of that there are differences between men and women in terms of their brains, in terms of their, how they're made. And originally, I didn't think that was a hugely controversial statement or position, but definitely in psychology, it has become that. There's a woman who's a researcher, a professor up in Wisconsin. She's a fine person, but we do not agree because here's her premise is when you take all the characteristics of males and females that are measured, she's not doing brain scan research. She's just measuring them on different, you know, personality tests, different objective measures, that there's more differences than there are similarities between men and women. And I agree with that. That's absolutely true. There's 97% overlap. It's the 3-5% that's different that is the issue in my mind. And her whole position is if we start taking the position that men and women have different brains, and then we fall into stereotypes, oh, women aren't good at math, and then we don't encourage little girls to get into STEM fields and things like that and math, you know, to really encourage them. I agree with that. I don't think we should use this information to discourage someone from pursuing a leadership track in school or in their career. I don't think we should use it to say women aren't good in engineering and math and that kind of thing. Of course not. But to deny differences doesn't really move things forward in terms of our understanding, because men are way different than females in a lot of really significant ways.
Yeah, we have a couple of.
Wow.
Oh, that's a biggie.
And
yeah.
Frank is that's now 5 years old. So.
And, yeah. And that's a news flash right there. But just as far as how we're behaviorally different, how our mind, and it's not just, I mean, what this study is suggesting is not just how we're socialized. That's the one argument is like kids are not, it's not just that they're socialized differently. I saw Matt Damon in an interview one time, and you know, Matt Damon's a very liberal guy, very, you know, kind of, I mean, he's a very, a guy who's gonna not be prone to stereotyping people. But he said, you know, from the time they're little, a little girl, a little boy, they're just different, right? They just are. The boys want to make a gun or point their finger like a gun. The girls want, you know, and it's not to say all boys are like that and all girls are like the other. It's just to say that there is a difference there. So I'm kind of landing pretty solidly on the side of the difference. And I think the study, which is looking at brain scans, is making that point too.
Yeah. And I do think it's important to just remind listeners that this sort of research is in its infancy for the most part. Like, we still have a long way to go with this sort of stuff. So, you know, we might see that there are some differences, and hopefully by identifying differences versus, you know, that it serves a function. It's not just to continue to divide the genders. It's to serve a purpose.
Right.
Okay. So on to our second study, and I love this one. Two studies suggesting a link between violent video games and real-life behavior have been retracted. And essentially, there's a researcher who put out a couple articles, and some postdocs and other people were analyzing his research, and it just did not add up, and it became personal. So these articles have been retracted from a couple journals. What do you think about that, Dave?
Well, again, this is something that, you know, where I land on this is that the video game research has suffered from an incredible bias. And so there is a bias in this field among some researchers, not all. And the bias is we're going to show that violent video games promote violent behavior. Unfortunately, it doesn't hold up. And there are some folks in Iowa, Villanova, and other that they consistently take a position, and we could quibble with the methodology of a lot of the studies, but what we know is that, and again, this is an evolving field as well. If you show little kids violent or expose them to violent video games, it is possible that their aggressive behavior goes up in the short run. What
meaning
that means
30 minutes,
an hour, and aggressive and violent are different in the research. Aggression is rough and tumble play, pushing somebody, tackling, rolling around the ground, that kind of thing. Violence is where you do tissue damage to someone, threaten them with a weapon, that kind of thing. So there's a difference in terms of the understanding. They get confused, the ideas. But so there's not a lot of evidence that long-term violence is increased by exposure to video games. There is evidence that short-term aggression is increased by exposure to violent video games. And what's interesting is that there have been at least one study that says the longer kids play, the less aggressive they are, which means it's probably not the content of what they're seeing. It's the autonomic arousal. It's that they're getting hopped up. And then if they play it for a couple hours, that levels out and they're not getting all, their heart rate's not racing and that kind of thing. And then that's what was explaining probably the aggressive play. So yeah, I think there's lots of room here to learn things, and I'm open to that. I just haven't appreciated the bias that people start with to say, we're going to prove that these games create more violent kids. It just hasn't, there are people that is their clear agenda. It hasn't held up.
Yeah, no, and I always love a good retraction in the literature. I don't know why, but it's like nice to see that people are fighting to try and get accurate information out there. And so this is great in my book because we do know there is a line of research that talks about all the benefits to video games too. You know, video games from, you know, when I first started playing stuff like Crash Bandicoot or like a racing game. Now, video games are increasingly complex. They're very realistic, and they're also more social in nature. And so we're starting to see that things like reasoning, memory and perception, your visual spatial skills, kind of the emotional benefits of reducing anxiety by playing video. There's all this research that's coming out now about the good things you can get from video games.
And I would like to say that I'm pretty sure I could have just retracted this article based on the following statement. The paper had studied the effects of violent media on verbal task performance in gifted and general cohort children and found that when children watched a violent cartoon for 12 minutes, their verbal skills dropped substantially for a temporary period. Like, no, I'm not. That's insane. There's no way that's true. And it's falsified data. And give me a freaking break. And how can you watch a violent cartoon for 12 minutes?
Like Tom and Jerry, like
Bugs
dropping
Bunny.
An anvil
Wait,
on someone.
Yeah. Oh, Bugs Bunny. Oh, so violent. Whatever.
Well, one of the studies years ago, they measured violence. Like they would have people either watch something violent or play a violent video game or that kind of thing. And first of all, violence in the game was even things like Mario. I mean,
right.
Like it was that
what?
Kind of. But yeah. the way that they measured someone acting violently is whether they were willing to shoot off an air horn at the other person.
That was it.
And it's like
it was blow a puff of air in their face.
That was another one. There was another one, blow a puff of air in someone's face. The other, and so I get it that they have a hard time measuring like if someone's really going to act violently. But it's not a well constructed study to even think about it that way. Now the other side of this is, there is a common sense aspect to that. If you've got a kid that's a little bit, well, let's say a lot low in empathy and remorse, has a history of violence, has trouble distinguishing fantasy from reality, things like that, then you probably aren't going to want to have them play a lot of shoot 'em up games.
Right.
Probably not. It's just, but that's just a common sense thing. But you talk about it, what's interesting. Every time there's a school shooting, they'll say, "Oh, he played violent video games." Well, the problem with that is every boy plays violent video games. I mean, that's it's normative. And so if one boy within that pool does, it doesn't mean that the game is causative. And we still don't have the link for that. So, and I don't think we're gonna get the link for that, to be real honest. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's our trending topic. Today, we're talking about the psychology of pot. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Hey, this is Dave Verhagen, one of the hosts of Shrink Tank and also author of the new book, Liberia's Son. Liberia's Son tells the true story of UJ Harris, who, as a child, was caught in the crossfire of an unexpected, brutal civil war in West Africa. When I met UJ and learned his story, I knew I had to write this book. I knew I wanted his story to be told. It's a great story of hope, courage, and resilience. It's available at HeroHousePublishing.com and Amazon.com. I hope you'll consider picking it up. Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. Dave Verhagen in Nashville, along with Frank Gaskell and Emma Kate Wright in Charlotte. And our trending topic today is pot culture, the psychology of marijuana. This podcast drops on 420, and so we felt like we would be remiss if we didn't highlight this. And we've talked about this on the podcast before, but a lot has changed culturally since then. And I'll tell you the two big things that have changed. One is that a lot of states have legalized marijuana for medicinal purposes and even for recreational purposes. I think California, for example, it's now like completely recreational, right? A lot of other states where it's either medicinal or recreational. And then the second is we have a change of administration that is the Attorney General is saying basically marijuana is just one click down from, you know, heroin use or something, or, you know, like hard drug, and that their stance on this topic is very at odds with where the culture has gone. So what's your sense of, first of all, like culturally where things are going or where things are in this current climate with regard to marijuana? Emma Kate, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, truly, I think now we are seeing that people who smoke marijuana, it's a very diverse culture. You've got, you know, adolescents and, you know, early 20s, and then you've got the, you know, people from the 60s and 70s that are now older and they're still smoking pot. And so, like, everyone, it seems like there's just this huge percentage of people that are smoking marijuana. So, yeah, and I feel like maybe the kind of slacker mentality is shifting a little bit because of that, you know, more diverse range of people. So, because I think everyone has that stereotypical, like, oh, well, you just sit around and smoke all day and have the munchies and you don't do anything, you're not motivated. When really, like, I know some people who are very successful, but they smoke pot and they're not, you know. So it's just interesting to see how perceptions with mainstream stuff is changing it.
Yeah, you know, over the centuries, pot really hasn't changed. It's been with us forever. Like, for example, a university tested Shakespeare's pipes. He had 24 pipes.
Oh, boy.
8 of them tested positive for cannabis. And also, in North Korea, everybody can smoke pot. So there's one thing for North Korea. Not many people know that. But
That's what's interesting, is that you know that. It's like your brain is the internet. It's like you know all this stuff.
I know.
That's just amazing.
And you know, you were talking about...
One thing I will...
You were talking about... This is legit. In Colorado, suicide rates have dropped 11% since pot has been legalized in men aged 20 to 29. And overall, statewide, suicide has dropped 5%.
Well, I did not know that. What I do know is what Lauren... I mean, what Emma Kate was saying was that the subculture of people who smoke marijuana has gotten increasingly broader. Like, the rates of pot use were actually higher in the 60s and 70s, but it was very clear that that was sort of counterculture, hippie culture, that kind of thing. Now it's pretty mainstream in terms of people that are executives, people that are business owners, people that, you know, not just college students. And, you know, a lot of high school kids will say, everybody in my high school smokes marijuana. Well, the truth is about 4 out of 10 high school seniors do. It's somewhere in the 35 to 40% in any given month. So if you think about that, that's 1 in 3. So depending on the group that you're hanging around with, it could be everybody you know. I mean, it really could. And the majority of people in that generation, the millennials and the generation after, the majority of folks that are younger now think there's no big deal with smoking marijuana, even if they don't personally do it. It's like 60%+ think it's not a big deal. So we definitely have seen a change in that. Do you think that's for the good, for the better, mixed? What's your opinion about this?
I mean, I think it's probably mixed, because so this is going to be great for industry, right? So I was looking at a poll where, you know, the legal market, or the market for legal pot, has grown like 75% almost in like California. So like it's just like booming business. And so when you think about how, if the government were to legalize this, they could make so much money on taxes from that.
Actually, Emma Kate, if the government legalized it, we would make $8.7 billion per year in tax revenue. But I'm glad that you wanted to know that.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Frank. So I think there is a big benefit in terms of business. However, I think the perception that pot is not harmful in any way because it's natural and all that, that's not completely true. And I wish Jonathan Hederle was here, since he's an addiction expert, but really, you can probably develop some tendencies to be somewhat addicted to marijuana, in the sense that you use it to kind of emotionally cope with things, or, there is some brain-based research that I'm not well versed in that shows how extended use of marijuana does change brain structure. So I think as pot does continue to be in this mainstream culture now, we're going to see more research being done on it and really get a clear picture of how is pot bad for us, because everything in moderation really is kind of the case, other than like heroin and things like that. So
and Frank's hair,
right? Only in moderation.
I tend to think of this like, the question is marijuana good or bad? And my answer is usually it's like fire. It's like asking, is fire good or bad, right? The answer is, well, if fire's in your fireplace, it's probably good. If it's on your wall, it's probably bad. And marijuana, it never been part of my life. I'll ask about that in a second. But, you know, from what I can tell from my clients and from the research, there are some benefits to some people from it, mm-hmm. No question.
Yeah.
And then there are clearly some downsides to other people. There are some people, you know, throw out the idea that this isn't addicting, that it doesn't, I mean, whether it's physiological or psychological or both, there are clearly people that marijuana has gotten its hooks in them to the point where it has dramatically affected their life. It's affected whether they can get through school at the college level. It's affected their motivation. It's affected their relationships. There's no question about that. So I don't have this sort of like, well, it's all good, it's all bad. I really think it has both, like any powerful thing. It's like saying, is the internet good or bad? It's like, well, it's really good and it's really bad. So that's kind of my take on it.
Dave.
Frank, what's your take?
Well,
oh no, here we go.
No, I'm just wondering, what do you call pot? Like, what's your favorite terminology?
You mean weed?
Okay. Pot, yeah. Many people are unaware of the fact that, you know, in Eskimo language, you have 100 words for snow. Well, in America, we have 200 words for pot. And I just found that fascinating and wanted to share.
Thank you, Frank.
Do you have any of those? Do you know what any of those words
like,
actually
are?
Bud, chiba, dank, dope, ganja, grass, herb, Mary Jane, pot, reefer, trees, weed, kush, chronic, nug, and so on. But that's just off the top of my head.
Frank, you're very well versed in the slang for weed. Have you ever done weed?
Not one time.
Huh.
Because if I did...
Well, let me ask you that.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. So neither have I, and we're probably some of the only people we know that have never smoked marijuana, right?
Or on Earth.
On Earth. What do you think you would be like if you got really high on weed? And what do you think I would be like if you got really high on weed?
I would go into a closet with a what are they called? Slumber bags? What are those things called? Are they called slumber bags?
No. Why can't
a sleeping bag. What's a slumber bag?
Good grief.
So I'd get in the closet with my slumber bag, and it'll all
He's
be goofy.
Already high.
Yeah.
And I would have a stick or something, and I backed up into a corner feeling like at any moment I would either be attacked or spontaneously combust.
No, I feel like you would be very much so focused on, like, the physical symptoms going on. You'd be like, oh,
right.
I'm going to die.
Yes.
I got to go to the hospital.
Yes. Ugh.
Like, everything's spinning or something like
That's
that.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, you would die. You're like, I got to go to the hospital.
I know what Dave
what
would
be like.
What do
you think my... What would I be like? I have a guess.
This is easy. And we have 100% consensus on this because we have discussed it at length. Dave would begin to share information and talking about things and just sort of ruminate and talk and talk and eventually go to sleep.
Yeah.
I'd be like a philosophy professor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I'd be all philosophical.
Yes.
And, yeah.
You would have like one of those epiphany moments where you're like, you guys, this is it. This is the best thing I have ever created or thought of.
We should go to the moon.
Listen. But then you'd say, but I'll tell you tomorrow. Let me tell you tomorrow. And then you wake up and you don't remember.
I need to process it.
Yeah, I think I would hold court. You know, like I'd sit somewhere and people would sit around.
That's
and I'd
right.
just wax yep. on philosophically.
100%.
Yep.
I would like I to see right. that before I die.
All right. That would be well worth the price of admission. All right. Well, there's a lot to talk about with the psychology of pot. We'll come back to it another time, but it is 420, which for those of you who don't know is the national holiday, I don't know how you'd say it, for marijuana.
Sure.
And it is the big day for pot smokers. And there's a lot of complexity to it. We'll leave it at that. There's a lot of good and bad potentially on both sides of that. And it's not going to go away. It's definitely something that's going to be part of our culture. All right, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, it's our doctor's orders. And this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Hi, this is Dave Verhagen. We're glad you listened to the Shrink Tank Podcast. And if you have room for one more podcast in your life, please check out Blew My Mind. Dr. Craig Pohlman and his panel talk about things in pop culture that blew their minds. It might be a love song, a movie twist, a television finale. It's something that blew their minds. You can hear it on shrinktank.com or download it through iTunes. It's Blew My Mind. Check it out. Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. I'm Dave Verhagen with Frank Gaskell and Emma Kate Wright, and we wrap this all up with our doctor's orders. These are things that we're personally enjoying in pop culture. And Emma Kate, what do you have for us?
So I've gotten into some new music recently. People should check out Drake's album More Life. There's some fun songs on there like Fake Love and Passion Fruit. And for those of you who are fans of Glee or a cappella music, Pentatonix released a new album of classic songs that were recorded a cappella. So I thought that was kind of fun and people should check it out.
That's awesome. And I'm going to recommend a movie. And full disclosure, this is a movie that Southeast Psych that we all work for has executive produced, and we have a role in it. About six of our people are in it, but Frank and I and about six other people went down to Tampa for the world premiere of Look to the Sky. It's a documentary by Brett Culp, and really it uses the backdrop of Superman, who is a figure that shows courage and is heroic and acts selflessly. And then he uses that to tell the story of a number of kids who have done really cool things in their lives where they've acted in some heroic way or some selfless way. And he's starting a multi-city tour. We're going to have Brett and his film in Nashville on the 25th. So this podcast is dropping on the 20th, and so Tuesday the 25th, we're pretty close to sold out, so might be tough to get tickets still. But if you are in a city where you can see Look to the Sky, then I encourage you to go see it. You can go to the Rising Heroes Project and see what cities it's going to be and see if you can score a ticket for that. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. We hope you'll check out shrinktank.com for articles, videos, and polls about movies and TV and music and books and all kinds of things in pop culture. Make sure you check us all out on shrinktank.com. Also, follow us on Twitter at Shrink Tank Talk and like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our producer and theme music composer is Sean Beck. In the Queen City, it's Emma Kate Wright and Frank Gaskell. And from Music City, I'm Dave Verhagen. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends about the podcast and make it a good week.
Shrink Tank.